Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures Film Club. It is the same premise as monthly book club, which is, of course, as everyone knows, but some might not know. I am hitting that age where I think I assume that everyone knows something. So I'm so excited. We'll stop a word or two. You got to forgive me on that one. We are going to discuss a film month, possibly bi-monthly as it goes along. We'll hopefully have two men this week. We have three men, one woman. Pick one film. We'll discuss only that film. This won't be to promo or profile or promote a festival. It will just be to discuss the film and go through it. Even if it's a film we've seen, all of us have taken a revisit this week of the film. This first film we have coming for you this week is Seven with Brad Pitt, Gwyneth Paltrow, Morgan Freeman, and directed by David Fincher. Let's see who we got our first guest while we're still going through the intros. Welcome.
Hey, Paul, it's Miles.
Hello, Miles. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Excellent. I'm good. Just going to go into guest intros. Today, everyone, we're going to be joined by Miles, who holds a PhD in classics, earned his degree from Tulane University, is a professor at University of Southern Mississippi, and he also brings to the table, he's a multi-award-winning writer, producer, director, actor. He's got three films on Amazon Prime. Today, we're also going to be joined by our podcast co-producer, Jim McNulty, who is 73, and he's been watching films since he was 13. So he's got six decades of being a banana film spaz. And then Aaron, hold on, Jim's going in. Welcome, Jim. You with us?
Hi.
Hello, Aaron. Welcome, Aaron. I wanted to introduce you to Miles. Miles, this is Aaron.
Hi, Miles.
Hi, Aaron.
Nice to meet you.
So glad to have you guys both on here. Miles, as I told you, was our first podcast guest. I was just introduced to you, Aaron. You're a theater actress, and you have 40 years as a film nut. And I was telling Miles how Jim has been since he's 13, he's now 73, has been all about the film, so six decades of film watching. So thank you guys for joining us today. I let the audience know this is our first official film club episode. We're going to do a format where we just give each person 3 minutes to do their intro, and then we'll kind of jump into a moderated discussion. So while we wait for Jim, whichever one of you would start out, feel free.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Go ahead, Miles.
No, okay. Oh, man.
No, let Miles go so I can copy his answer.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was going to say, yes. Actually, we do ladies first. We'll be gentlemen-like.
Okay, so I'm just a film buff. I have no, college stuff. I have no film credits. I just love movies, always have. I find that people look at films differently. Like, I am not a person who knows, like, I couldn't tell you who directed what film. Some people, that's their thing. So when I saw that I was watching this show, I said, what other movies did he direct? I go, oh my God, I loved all of these. I don't look at the director unless it's something that is super epic that people talk about, like, you know, Spielberg or something. So I just enjoy a film. Some people go, oh my God, the lighting. I'm like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But I might listen to the music, the soundtrack, the natural light. And like, I remember you and I talked about The Departed, how it was all shot with natural light. That was quite obvious to me. But, you know, the way, you know, the angles, the cinematography and stuff like that, that's something that I'm starting to pick up of, you know, listening to you and you know, just as I get older, I'm focusing on films a little differently. But I just enjoy going to the theater. That's my movie pass. I think I'm probably the reason my movie pass is going bankrupt. because I was seeing probably two movies a week. Yeah, I'm the cause of that, and I apologize to everyone. But yeah, I'm just it's my form of entertainment. It's my form of escapism. Yeah, there's not too many genres that I won't watch. Probably sci-fi is probably my least favorite. Like sci-fi fantasy, like Harry Potter. Like, you know, that's my least favorite. I'd watch if I had to, but it's probably my least favorite. Yeah. And
Thank you for that, Aaron. And how about you, Miles, on a self-introduction before we jump into seven?
Well, like Aaron, I'm a great lover of film. I also have the amazing fortune to be able to make films. I've made 4 features and 4 shorts over the last 5 years or so. And Paul, as you mentioned, most of them are available on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and the usual suspects. We have a new one coming out next year called Hallowed Ground. So I'm sure we'll be talking more about that on a later podcast. But I've loved movies since 1981 when I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater. And from that moment on, I've been absolutely transfixed and enthralled by the world of cinema.
Yeah.
And I'm a lover of film, a student of film. I'm a teacher of film now at the University of Southern Mississippi. And Seven was one of those films for me. I was in college, which shaped and changed the way I thought about movies moving forward, and certainly has heavily impacted the way I make movies. So I'm really eager to chat about it with you guys today.
Oh, excellent.
I'm telling your age by the movies that you saw. So I'm thinking, the first movie I ever saw in the movie was the original Mary Poppins. So, and it's interesting because I remember going to see Raiders, but I was not, obviously, I was not your age. But there are certain movies I'm just like, I remember very clearly where I was when I saw them. You know, I remember saying to my son, I was pregnant when I think I saw the movies. I think that's the reason why my son was such a huge Raiders fan. Raiders of the Lost Ark franchise, because I was pregnant. I think I was pregnant when I saw that with him. But Mary Poppins was the first movie I ever saw, and I remember just being blown away by that. I mean, I think it came out in 66, so I would have been like 10 years old, but just maybe 64, but I was young, and just remember being blown away by that, and that was my first movie experience. But when they said
that was a groundbreaker for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what's so great about what you guys are saying, because Seven, I mean, I'm a couple years behind Miles, because the first movie I remember seeing, I was only 2, was Superman, but in the theater was Return of the Jedi, and I think that these were all groundbreaking films for their time. Obviously, we look back now and we think, wow, that was effects, but for Seven, Miles, you had this great choice, because when you said Seven, I thought, you know, Seven was groundbreaking for anyone at any age. It wasn't, oh, wow, Superman could fly. It wasn't the adventure. It wasn't what Mary Poppins was for the time. I think Seven could come out today, maybe because it affects it, but it just kind of, wherever you were understanding or not understanding Seven sins in religion, I mean, I was 16 years old, and I have a small list of movies, and everyone on there, all the opinions of the show are of the person speaking them. So if I say something that's not reflecting on Miles or the colleges he works at or Aaron and her profession, so I call them motherfucker of movies, and I just remember it was like a 10 o'clock show, and I just remember thinking, like, why can we not go back and watch it again? It was just, I had not seen anything like it. And when I revisited it the other day, what I loved so much about it was I felt that same way. Obviously, there will be spoilers we'll discuss, but we'll discuss the main spoiler. Even today of some things that were left out of that film that we definitely don't get into, that were the surprise, now the ironic surprise that they hold. So with that, Miles, is there something now that you've now that the film, I guess, is almost 25 years old, now that you have some reflection and got to revisit it, is there something you could tell as a, now that you're a teacher and having studied the classics, you have to examine some of these timeless themes and some stuff you could share with us about Seven, which of course people could tell it's based on the Seven Deadly Sins and it's a crime thriller film. So fire away with whatever you'd like to say, Miles.
Well, I think you make an excellent point, Paul, which is great pieces of art have a certain timelessness about them. They feel like, in spite of their age, they could have been released yesterday. And I certainly feel that way about Seven and Pulp Fiction, which is another film of that same era, or the music of Led Zeppelin. When you listen to that stuff or you watch those films, they don't feel dated. They feel fresh still, and that's a testament to the artist who created them. I think Fincher, the first thing that strikes you about Seven is the look. And Fincher had hired cinematographer Darius Kanji to work on this, and one of the first things apparently he told Darius was that he wanted to make a black and white film in color. So he wanted to have that black and white noir kind of approach and yet be in color. And there, when you watch the film, you can completely see what he's talking about. It has this gritty, grungy, desaturated, dark, noir quality to it. From the very opening frames, you feel the look and the style of the film contributing very organically to the whole and to the story that Fincher and Andrew Kevin Walker, the screenwriter, are trying to tell. And that's something that, you know, only the very, very best movies, I think, really, really capture that thing, that lightning in the bottle, which is the style of the film, the way the film is shot, the music in the film. All of the tentacles of the film are contributing to a singular aim, that is to tell this story. And, you know, another example would be something like The Godfather and the way it's shot. But Seven has that thing. Before a word is spoken, when the first images flash across the screen, you feel what this film is and what it's going to be. And I think that's a testament to Fincher's work. I've really admired him for so long. I mean, perhaps ironically, it was a disastrous film, Alien 3, which ultimately led him to Seven. That was not only a disappointing film for him as a director, but disappointing at the box office. And he wanted to sort of purge that memory by choosing something completely different. And apparently he really liked Seven's sort of unconventional approach to the detective, the noir genre. He was really drawn to the finale. So he signed on to do it, and we movie lovers are quite thankful that he did.
I want to add on to what you're saying.
How about you, Aaron?
Well, I was just saying, as far as the way it was shot, the whole black and white and color, and also the constant rain. And I mean, because I was talking to three young kids last night that I'm doing theater with, and they're probably all in their late 20s, early 30s, and they had never heard of it or seen it. And I said, you guys got to go home and watch it. I said, but it's a dark movie. I said, so I don't know if I don't know how much stuff stays with you, so I don't know if I'd be watching it right before I go to bed. I said, but it was between the lighting and the weather. Because I even Googled while I was watching, where is this supposed to be? Like, what city is this supposed to be? And, you know, everything being shot in alleyways and going into all these, you know, rooms where all these crimes have happened. It was just so dark. And that just adds to the heaviness of the movie, for sure. What I wanted to ask you guys is, what do you think? Because I don't know. It's not like I'm quizzing. Why do you think there was so much focus on the fact that Brad Pitt's shirts were always, always wrinkled? Was that just to be this juxtaposition between Morgan Freeman, who just always had his stuff together and had a plan for everything he did, and Brad Pitt, who was always kind of – he was a little frenetic during the show, angry, you know, had a hard time keeping himself under control. But, like, what was the focus? you know, he was a grown man. He had a wife. You know, why were his shirts always wrinkled? Am I missing something there? Was that just to add to his freneticness?
I would venture just to say that that Fisher is such a, I mean, even if you just go back to his less revered films, which I still enjoy Panic Room, and I love The Social Network, even though it was just so, took the world by storm, because it was a story of Facebook, but with Seven and, of course, Fight Club, he's, I think, to me, I'm sure you agree, Miles, he's such a, he's just such a master of subtext. That's where I kind of started catching more and more stuff with Brad Pitt, just little looks he would give Morgan Freeman, where it was really setting up early on the way their characters weren't getting along. And we know, as writers and screenwriters, and Aaron, you set scripts and writing for theater, and Miles, you having to judge students that wait, and being a writer yourself, that you have to start those seeds early. But it's a really interesting observation, Aaron, because I know a lot of films will do stuff like, you know, the guy's hat was always backwards because his life is backwards. Or so I'm going to actually go back on Netflix tonight and take a look at that, because Pitt really never seemed to have his stuff together. So that's kind of an interesting...
Absolutely.
That's an interesting take. Miles, for you, and I'm sure it's changed over the years, do you have a sin, other than we obviously won't talk about the last one, do you have any of the sins that either changed or that you remember has been the one that hit you the hardest when you saw it and when you rewatched it?
I mean, they're all pretty powerful. I guess for me, the opening with Gluttony is really the gut punch. I mean, the lust sequence is also incredibly disturbing and powerful. But you know, the gluttony imagery with the guy, the obese man with the bucket of vomit. I mean, it's just, I mean, it's so grotesque and just grabs you by the throat right out of the gate. And maybe it is because it's the veritable opening of the film that you go, oh, we're really going down this
rabbit
hole.
We're in for a ride. Yeah. Oh, they started already.
Yeah. So I guess that would be the one. And it also sort of introduces the dynamic between Pitt's character, David Mills, and Somerset, played by Morgan Freeman, and just who they are. And I think Aaron is right to point out a detail like the wrinkled shirt. Fincher has a reputation for being a very meticulous and detail-oriented director, so I'm sure that was meant to tell you something about who this guy is, this sort of hair-trigger,
right,
seat of his pants, not going to take the time to iron his shirt kind of guy, over and against Morgan Freeman's character, who's more calm and steady and put together and rational and sees sort of the bigger picture. So, but yeah, in terms of the sense, they're all brilliantly and disturbingly drawn. But I remember when I saw the film for the first time, and even seeing it again, the gluttony section really hit me in the face, and it really sets the tone for the entire film. So I think that's the one that is probably for me the most powerfully wrought.
I thought Kevin Spacey was amazing. I know he's the elephant in the room, but he plays a great wacko. I mean, he was just so calm, and his posture and the way there was everything about him was deliberate. And I really focused on him last night, the other day when I watched it. I thought, man, just his voice and he was just the epitome of restraint, which made Brad Pitt crazy, you know. And he was just, you know, making him nuts that he was doing that. But it's too bad because of the crap that went on in Kevin Spacey's personal life. no one's going to remember anything that he was a phenomenal actor, sadly.
Well, that's a great, there's a great line in the car, and it's not a spoiler at all, where, Brad Pitt says, this is my eeriest sin of all the scenes, is when he says, you're just a movie of the week. And I think now when you watch Stand By Me and River Phoenix characters disappears, it has a whole other meaning. So when Pitt says that, it's just kind of like, whoa. And for me, I forget what sin it was, but it was and remained the same, where that guy that they're torturing, and he ends, which can happen through any of the sins, so we're not spoiling it, but I remember that for me jumping out of my chair. I mean, I know we have these cliche movie sayings, but I really remember being 16 and just being like, what the heck? Like, this isn't my older brother forcing me to see a Freddy movie. This is like an actual film. And last thing to mention on Fincher, for those of you, if you looked up on Internet Movie Database, has an 8.6. I think it deserves a 9. Oddly, only nominated for one Oscar, for Best Editing, Richard Francis Bruce, who I know we're going to know, who edited Air Force One, The Rock, Repo Man, Ghost Rider, a number of other great films. But that movie, to me, I don't know how it didn't. And also, Miles, since you mentioned, we'll let the audience know there's a new book out about Darius. I always pronounce it wrong, Conjury. We might actually have the author of the book on the show. So it's going through his career, and it's kind of like a conversation with his work. And so we'll make sure and let people know that they're interested in that. So the last thing, as we head into our last couple minutes of here of our first episode, is there anything for you that in this revisit jumped out, where you went, hey, holy, I how did I not see this?
I think for me, I was reminded of a couple of things. One, how great Brad Pitt is in this film.
It's
probably my favorite Brad Pitt performance. And some of it is just he's beautifully cast. He was the perfect actor for the role. And the chemistry between he and Morgan Freeman is just exquisite. They are both absolute fantastic in this film. And their relationship and the dynamic between their relationship and the opposition of one to the other, this young kind of neurotic, seat of his pants detective who thinks he knows everything but in fact knows nothing, versus Morgan Freeman, who's this world weary, been around the block, just trying to get the other foot out the door. That relationship and those performances are the linchpin of the movie. And I mean, I guess I knew that the first time I saw it, but sometimes maybe with this film in particular, because of the style, because of the cinematography and the rain and the gore and the disturbing images, we forget that the thing that makes the film work is the central relationship between Morgan and Brad's characters, that it just drives the whole thing.
I know, I realize there's a lot of similarities as far as the way it's shot and stuff between that and Fight Club. I also am a big fan of relationships between actors and directors. The fact that the two of them did three movies together, I like that. Obviously, there's a mutual respect there. Lawrence Kasdan and Kevin Costner, a lot of these, they just find people that they just gel with. And I like that because it shows... Like I said, it shows a mutual respect. But I was looking at this, I go, yeah. And when I Googled what he did, I go, yeah, I could see a little bit of Fight Club in this, that kind of that darkness, so noir kind of underground kind of part of the planet that I don't ever see. You know, that underground kind of, if it literally wasn't underground like Fight Club, it was just that image. during seven this world that I exist in, but I don't. It's, you know, I don't, that's not a world that I travel in. I coexist in this world. But it was just so disturbing just to watch that. And I always think to myself, how do these detectives, cops, whoever, how do they sleep at night when you see stuff like that every day? I can't imagine.
It's like an underbelly of society.
That extends even to the credit sequence, which we had never seen anything like that. Kyle Cooper, who did the credits for the film, I mean, no one had seen anything like that. And then at the end, the credits roll backwards. There is just this singular vision about the film, which must, I guess, rest with Fincher, where once again, everything feels like it's contributing to this dark, terrible, grotesque world. And you know, I can't remember who it is. Kyle Cooper went on to do other credit sequences, and I think it was somebody like Zack Snyder who said, you know, people stopped hiring Kyle Cooper because the credit sequences would be better than the actual film. credit sequences in this film is really amazing.
Oh,
I
yeah,
mean,
no,
the
that's
credits
good, no.
Almost an extra scene. It's like,
yeah,
don't be
yeah.
leaving during the credits.
Yeah.
No, that's a
and
really great point,
that
Miles.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is also very similar, that dark underbelly of the world that we don't see. Plus, I was just a huge fan of that movie because I'm a big fan of the trilogy books. But, I was looking at his list of stuff. There's not one of his movies that I didn't like. They're a whole way different. Like the Zodiac was also very dark. But then you get like Gone Girl. That was not as dark as like – or Panic Room. Not very dark. But Fight Club,
right.
Tattoo, Zodiac, they all had that very other world that exists, but the underbelly that I just – yeah. I don't really care to be a part of. I know this kind
of
stuff goes on, but
I think of him as like a Fincher. I compare him to Hitchcock because I think of Except for Us film junkies who have to go through everything, and we're not snobs, we're not saying it in that way, but to where we have to see The Game and we have to see Gone Girl and we have to see Zodiac, as compared to a lot of Fincher fans, they haven't heard of The Game, and The Game came before Fight Club. Yeah, and The Game was fantastic. Yeah, Michael Douglas.
That was one of the first movies where I just went, what the what?
Yeah, and, you know, and
I,
these
I,
are all.
Like, I almost have to rewatch it, go and look for things. Like, that was the best plot twist ever.
Oh,
I
totally.
So
you have to remind people that Fincher is more than just Seven. Of course, Social Network, because it was FaceTime. Gone Girl, and I think Panic Room, if I remember correctly, Darius, and another cinematographer are both credited, and what brilliance that you can't tell the difference. And I think he started with, I think it's Jeff Cronenweth.
Jordan Cronenweth, yeah.
Yes, and he's, and Gone Girl, amazing. I want to say he had a Oscar nom. I know he was up for an ASC award for that when I was fortunate enough. The Zodiac is a fantastic movie, but so many people I know grew up in North California or the Bay Area, so they're too scared to watch it, which is kind of...
I remember,
It's so intriguing about movies because it's like Zodiac they won't watch, but Seven they love, and Seven's like graphic and gratuitous. And like,
absolutely.
It's just the fact
but
that
see,
some
for me,
dude
that
was really...
Yeah. I'm not a Chainsaw Massacre, The Scream.
Right.
I'm not that kind of... I don't like that shock stuff. I like more psychological thrillers like this. Like, to me, The Exorcist scared the living daylights out of me. Chainsaw Massacre just is lame. That's the reactionary for me. That wouldn't keep me up at night. Exorcist would keep me up at night. And also when you consider when it came out. Like, I think these kids, this generation out there, are so desensitized to scary movies. I remember my kids laughing at Psycho. I go, that shower scene was scary.
Oh, yeah.
Huge. But now they're like, whoa, this is so lame. But yeah, but you know, to me, I love psychological thrillers.
For this Fincher thing that we've been saying, we'll close up and wrap up on, except for your guys' final words, is two directing nominations were Benjamin Button, which is, I think, 100 million miles away from Seven, and The Social Network, which is, I think, is 200 million miles away from Fight Club. So that is very intriguing. Again, anyone out there, you new fans of the show and this series, we are going to be doing it monthly. We'll be adding in men, two men, two women, filmmakers, lovers. We'll be getting in everything we can. But please make sure you check out The Game, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Beware, there is a Miles, please correct me if I'm wrong. I can't remember if it's Swiss or Swedish, the original. So I want to make
Swedish.
Sure that.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I want to make sure that
especially
people.
The Game, though. That really feels like the lost Fincher film, and it
yeah,
truly
oh,
is a wonderful
yeah.
film.
Yes.
And very
and
much
Sean
in the spirit of Seven and Fight Club and Fincher's sort of dark, glass half empty worldview. So that's definitely worth checking out.
Oh, yes, definitely. I agree with you. And I think we will close with, because we're not going to have a discussion about it, but I just love, this is a nice bow tie to the subversiveness of David Fincher, that we can't talk about it. He's responsible for being of the EP for numerous episodes of House of Cards. So I'm going to leave my opinion
yeah, directed,
on that note.
Directed several episodes as well.
Yes, and directed the pilot, and of course Jodie Foster's in there. And so as we leave that boat out there about that closes it for me. Feel free any order, Miles or Aaron, any final words? And from Talking Pictures, thank you so much for joining us today.
You are welcome.
My
You're
absolute
welcome.
Pleasure. Thank you for talking about a film that I love and still think about all the time.
Well, I'm glad to maybe go back and rewatch it, so thanks for that. Because I thought, oh, let me see, it's off Netflix. And yes, it was. So I was watching it and taking notes. And so it's kind of nice. It's like, yeah, I saw it a long time ago, but it was nice to bring it to the forefront and have you rewatch it. And then when I made a list of all those other movies, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go back and watch Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So I enjoyed that,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. Get a Fincher Festival going. So
there you
we
go,
know
Fincher.
You got – yeah, so everyone out there, make sure note Miles. You, now that you've heard him discussing Seven, you can check out The Historian, The Hollow, and Demons on Amazon Prime. And Aaron is a frequent guest. We will be doing multiple Oscar episodes and an Oscar wrap. So these two are frequent guests and have been on. So that's going to do it for me. Aloha from all of us at Talking Pictures, and we look forward to the next episode.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Paul. Good
Take
chatting.
Care. Happy holidays.
Okay, you
Aloha,
too.
Everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.